A. Elliott Ray v. Boatwright, 082825.
May it please the Court, Jitender Delaney for Petitioner Appellant Elliott D. Ray. In order to convict Ray, the State in this case had to prove that he was at the scene of the crime on 29th Street. The only evidence that placed Ray at the scene of the crime with the weapon were hearsay statements of Ray's co-conspirators, Miriam Miles and Sylvester Townsend.
Just in pausing, was an objection timely made in the trial court?
No.
So that we're looking for, if we're looking for anything, we're looking for plain error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
It is clearly established law that co-conspirator statements offered for the truth of the matter asserted violate the Confrontation Clause.
But as I understand it, Miles and Townsend's statements, you know, even though they may be prejudicial, they weren't introduced to show Ray's reaction.
Your Honor, that's what the government has claimed in its brief, but we believe that as you look at the record, there are a couple of important things to note. One is his reaction could have been shown without those statements. The other thing to note is the reaction itself directly makes the point. The statements by Miles and Townsend make the key point of the case, namely placing Ray at the scene of the crime, shooting a weapon. As this court noted in Silva, when you have statements that directly incriminate the defendant, there may be other rationales offered by the state, but those statements, to allow them to stand, to allow the jury to hear those statements, would in fact eviscerate the confrontation right and the hearsay rules. In this case, the other thing that should be made apparent is when you look at the government's closing, the prosecution refers to Miles and Townsend's statements repeatedly. As noted, they say, quote, Mary Miles says you're out there with a 9. Sylvester Townsend says you had a 45. There are two other instances in the closing where the government notes Miles and Townsend were witnesses, indicating that that you were there. Now, they do talk about the reaction, but the jury at this point has listened to a great deal of testimony. They know who Miles and Townsend are. They know that other individuals have been prosecuted for these crimes. It's extraordinarily prejudicial to be able to say these two individuals who you know were participants, who you know were there, who you know have been prosecuted, are placing Ray at the scene of the crime, and Ray had no way of counteracting those statements. There was no cross-examination opportunity, so in the minds of the jury, there's no better evidence than co-conspirators saying, well, we saw you there. We saw you there with a gun.
Did the court give any kind of instruction on how these statements should be viewed?
No, there was no limiting instruction.
No request for one either.
And no yeah.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Again, as I pointed out in U.S. v. Silva, this circuit has noted that the non-hearsay purpose is not believable when statements directly incriminate the defendant. There are other cases from this circuit where the claim that there was a non-hearsay purpose has been distinguished based on concerns about prejudice. When you look at what happened here, it's clear that the standard that the court should have applied, the state court, and again the district court, should have been the Ohio v. Roberts line of cases on confrontation. The evidence was so critical, and it established such essentially the only issue in the case that the jury was able to take it as substantive evidence against Ray. It functioned as substantive evidence against Ray. And under the Ohio v. Roberts, Lee v. Illinois, and Lilly v. Virginia precedent by the Supreme Court, it clearly falls into the category of statements that are presumptively unreliable. And with that presumptive unreliability, confrontation is required. As this court has noted, when such confrontation violations occur, the government bears the burden of showing that a violation was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The factors that this court has noted are important are looking at the import of the testimony, whether the testimony was in fact cumulative, whether other evidence corroborated or contradicted the testimony, and the overall strength of the prosecution's case. For all of those factors, we've established that the record favors a showing that the error was in fact harmful. The testimony, the statement placing Ray at the scene of the crime with a weapon was critical. It was critical of the government's case. All of the other evidence was contradicted. All of the other state's witnesses either retracted their statements or qualified them on the stand. Ray himself testified, explaining the circumstances of his withdrawal. And
he admitted in his testimony, didn't he, that he was on his way to the scene of the shootout. He had the gun in his hand, and he just decided to turn around. He didn't say that to anybody, did he?
Ray's statement was that he let the people that he was walking with know that he wasn't going with them. And that on the stand he testified to the fact that after he let everyone know that he wasn't continuing onward, that they heckled him and called him a variety of profanities, and he returned to the house. Given the prejudicial effect of this evidence, we believe that Ray is entitled to a new trial. Under both Blintz and Gonzalez, this court has noted that when the evidence has a prejudicial effect, a new trial is warranted.
Let me just ask you this question. As I understand Wisconsin law, the withdrawal defense is not available when someone changes his mind like Ray did as the act is about to be committed. So under Wisconsin law, he could still be convicted as a party to the crime, right?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that...
Well, you agree that the withdrawal defense is not available when someone changes his mind as the act is about to be committed, that part. You agree that's a fair interpretation of Wisconsin law?
Yes, and I would say that in this case, the act was not about to be committed. They were on their way to commit the act, but Ray withdrew well before they arrived.
Nothing wrong with you saving the rest of your time for rebuttal, though.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if you have no more questions. Thank you.
Ms. or Mrs. Lloyd? All right.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Kate Lloyd. Sorry.
Down a little if you want. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Representing the respondent in this habeas case, in which the state of Wisconsin is the real party at interest. This wasn't really mentioned in opening, but this is a habeas case, so we aren't looking for plain error. We aren't looking for harmless error. This is whether or not the state court of appeals decision is contrary to or an unreasonable application.
Yep, that's exactly what we're working on, the confrontation.
Right. And these statements, I think, are so clearly not hearsay that I don't even think... What's that?
They're talking about somebody else saying something to them, and they're relating it. And what other purpose is there except to get that information to the jury?
The purpose is to elicit Ray's reaction to those statements, his inculpatory...
But you can give his reaction without that.
I think that would be difficult to do. I think the context is pretty important, and as in Lee, in this court's case...
Think it's reasonably important that he have a right to confront people who are saying he was there when he says he wasn't?
Well, first of all, I'm not even sure that those statements were made. I mean, for all I know, Detective Phillips was using this as some sort of police interrogation technique.
Several people say you committed the crime. Specifically, these people have said you've done it. And
right.
You can say that for the jury.
And those statements are inconsistent. One person says he saw you there with a 9mm. One person says he saw you there with a .45.
Well, that's not precisely inconsistent in terms of the crime.
Right, but police use these techniques all the time. A witness saw you. What would you say
if
a witness?
They do use these all the time. But that's only to get the statement of the defendant in.
Right, but without knowing what had been said to Ray, the jury would be left without the same amount.
Right.
What is it that the defendant said that was so significant that you wanted to get in, other than his reaction to look shocked?
Well, a few things. First, he said, well, why don't you tell me which kind of gun was used to kill the victim,
right,
and I will tell you what happened. And then, and also, this is in through a whole...
He didn't say that. He said, tell me what kind of gun was used, and I'll tell you what happened.
But I think the whole scenario, what happened, is important. From the beginning, when he first starts his interview, denying that he has any knowledge of these events whatsoever. So when the narration needs to go from the beginning to the end and to eliminate what changed, why he changed his story, I don't think the jury would have the full version of events.
On cross-examination of the detective, in your hypothetical, that they could say, we made up these things. Could the defense lawyer say, you made all that up, didn't you?
Yes.
And get an answer?
Yes.
But they didn't make this up, did they?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. I assume that they didn't, but I don't know.
There's no feeling that there was, no suggestion there was.
No.
Shouldn't that be the burden of the government to show that there was actually somebody who said that or that it was made up?
Well,
to justify the fact you bring it in, not for the truth of the matter contained in. Why did you do it?
Well, I don't see that there's really that much of a distinction if it's not entered to show that Miles
That's where you get into it. At some stage of the game, it seems to me, I don't believe the government when they said that's why they put it in. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I just disagree. I think that it's clear in this case that that's why it was in.
It doesn't even seem to be necessary. If it's not necessary, I don't know why it's so clear.
Well, just first of all, I think it is necessary because I think the whole context of the police interrogation is relevant.
It's necessary to get a conviction, all right, but not necessary to get the information in.
Well, again, I have to disagree. I think it is relevant and it was important. And also, it was unobjected to, as you stated. So to say that then the trial judge should have been alerted to this, that this was plain error, is, I think, kind of a dramatic stretch. And then on top of that, to say the other layer of the AEDPA, that the Court of Appeals finding that this wasn't hearsay, applying Street and other cases, that's just simply not... He hasn't shown that that's contrary to those cases.
How much cross-examination on this point was, remind me, was the detective subjected to?
You know what? I'm not sure. I think that
one could argue that Ray's counsel could cross-examine him on Ray's reaction to the statement, could cross-examine him on the recollection of Miles and Townsend's statements and the circumstances in which he took them. But certainly, wouldn't you agree, one could be at risk to bring out the circumstances under which the detective got these statements. I mean, it could potentially get the defendant more and more enmeshed depending on the circumstances under which they were taken. So
yeah,
I don't know that that's much of a protection.
Right, and I didn't really argue that cross-examination of Phillips would be a protection. I really rest my case on that this isn't hearsay, and the Court of Appeals decision on that ground is reasonable. Right, it's also... I think significant to note that Ray did testify on his own behalf and did explain those statements. So there was some protection in that way. He got up and said, yeah, I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was I can help you out with the case. Tell me what kind of gun was used. And I just think that this case is very similar to Lee versus McCautry, this court's case, in which the statements weren't hearsay, and you don't have any sort of complicating circumstances. Mr. Ray relies on the prosecution's closing arguments in, again, relaying the statements of Miles and Townsend, but it's clear if you look at the context, again, the emphasis is on Ray's reaction, not on the co-actor's statements. There are no more questions. I just ask that this court affirm the district court. Thank you.
Mr. Jelani.
Your Honor, just a few clarifications. One, obviously, the record does show that when Detective Phillips was testifying, he was speaking about, he testified to statements made by Miriam Miles and Sylvester Townsend. Two, as the Supreme Court noted in Douglas, there's a real danger to the cross-examination of a police officer because it's very easy for the officer to quite honestly say, yes, these statements were made. There's no way to actually confront the individuals that are making those statements. And that, of course, is the danger. That's why the confrontation right here is so critical. And I do believe that the state's emphasis on what Street allowed them to do and how the statements were used in context is misleading, because if you're a juror, really all you need to know is that he was at the scene of the crime, and you've got two individuals who've repeatedly been referenced as co-conspirators saying unequivocally, you were there and you had a weapon and you were shooting.
And again, there was no direction given the jury as how they handle these things. That it was not offered for the truth of the matter contained.
No, there's no limiting instruction in the record, Your Honor. Final point, I just want to, Your Honor's correct, obviously, that the standard on review is whether there's clearly established federal law, and we believe that this case clearly falls into the Roberts line of cases, which have come to conclude that these kinds of co-conspirator statements are so prejudicial that they're presumptively unreliable, and without confrontation, they shouldn't be allowed in.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Delaney.
Thank you.
And thanks to your firm for allowing you to do this representation. We appreciate the assistance you've given your client, your fine briefs, and your fine argument and brief as well. Ms. Lloyd, we'll take the case under advisement.